This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
For co-host Bea Bonner, I'm Randy Eccles. Community Voices is conversations with neighbors, artists, and area business people, along with events you might have missed. We drop you into the debut panel of the UIS Center for Lincoln Studies. A variety of historians discuss how the wealth of Lincoln lore benefits Central Illinois and serves as guidance to us. Here's moderator and acting director, Ann Mosley.
Lincoln's presidency tends to dominate Lincoln scholarship. Why do you think the Illinois story needs more attention? Sarah, with Looking for Lincoln and the National Heritage Area, you cover 43 counties here in Illinois that tell the Lincoln story. What do you think about the Illinois story and why it needs more attention?
Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area is one of 55 National Heritage Areas throughout the country, each legislated separately. So we have our own federal legislative mandate, and we are the only National Heritage Area of the 55 telling the story of a person. So I believe that right there talks about the significance of Abraham Lincoln. And too often, as you said, we think of Lincoln as he came into the presidency. And if we don't look at the 43 counties that he spent his time in, those communities, the people that he impacted and impacted him, we can't really understand that man who went on to be president. It's important that we tell that story of the life and times of Abraham Lincoln here in Illinois to truly understand the rest of the Lincoln story.
If you're wanting to learn more about the heritage area, you have a wonderful website that links people to one area within Illinois to the next, and some amazing itineraries that link the Lincoln home, the old state capitol, but also places like Mount Pulaski and Atlanta and Lincoln, Illinois. It's an amazing story to tell and how they are interwoven into one another. But you also include some interesting Illinois stories. And we have some interesting Lincoln scholars here who provide a lot of perspective on the life of Lincoln. I turn next to Dr. Graham Peck. What Illinois story do you think is overlooked within the Lincoln storyline and within the Lincoln legacy?
I want to talk a little bit about my favorite Lincoln letter to a man named Joshua Speed, who was one of Lincoln's closest friends, who befriended Lincoln when he came virtually penniless to Springfield. And yet to do that, I want to first set some context, which will be helpful. And perhaps the best context is the title of a great book by a great Lincoln scholar named Donald Fehrenbacher. And the book was titled Prelude to Greatness. He was focusing on the 1850s. And the core argument that he made was that the 1850s was the period where Lincoln came into greatness. It was his preparation for the tremendous challenges of the presidency. The reason it was such an important decade is because there was enormous amount of social turmoil. There had been large numbers of Irish and German immigrants, especially, who had come into the country in the past 10 years. There was a huge nativist movement, the biggest in American history, that had arisen to attempt to sort of subjugate them, to keep them from fully exercising freedoms in American society. And that had been paired with enormous disruption to the existing political parties, the Whig and Democratic parties, because of the expansion of slavery issue. And all of this made the political environment extremely topsy-turvy. And in this time period, as Fehrenbacher would have argued, Lincoln started to oppose slavery in a very focused way, with a core understanding that it was opposed to the best interests of the American nation and had to be confronted. Understanding that, he helped found a political party in Illinois that would, of course, take the fight over slavery ultimately to the South deliberately in order to end slavery. He had to work with a huge number of new people from other political parties, people that he had in some cases combative relationships with previously in his political career. And he had to do it in a very mature way to tamp down fights between many of these opposed members. So he does all of this. And there's a great letter that we can sort of pinpoint some of his attributes in the process of doing this over the decade of the 1850s. And it's his letter to Speed in August of 1855. The letter highlights his true hatred of oppression and his hatred of slavery and his love of justice and equality. Let me read you a piece of it because it gives us such insight into Lincoln's character and his political leadership and how they were united. He writes to Speed, who asks him what he is politically in this topsy-turvy moment where everything's in the air and the political parties are disintegrating. And he says, "I am not a know-nothing." That was the nativist party. "That is certain," he said. "How could I be? How can anyone who abhors the oppression of Negroes be in favor of degrading classes of white people? Our progress in degeneracy appears to me to be pretty rapid. As a nation, we began by declaring that all men are created equal. We now practically read it, all men are created equal except Negroes. When the know-nothings get control, it will read, all men are created equal except Negroes and foreigners and Catholics. When it comes to this," he said, "I should prefer immigrating to some country where they make no pretense of loving liberty. To Russia, for instance, where despotism can be taken pure and without the base alloy of hypocrisy." This letter really characterizes Lincoln at that moment, and in a letter where he was able to be entirely candid with one of his closest friends, and he didn't have that many close friends that he was highly candid with. We know this expresses his true opinions, and he carried this out by trying to bring Catholics and Germans and Irish and foreigners into his party where he could to battle against what he thought the key issue was, where you pursue the preservation of liberty against the enslavement of Black people in this country. That, I think, would be a great, it's not fully overlooked, but it tells us something about the importance of marrying moral clarity and political leadership and pursuing that in policy to change the country for the better. And I think there's a lot of lessons for that for us today.
We are now focusing on the center opening and what we can learn. There are a number of institutions out there that dedicate to the study of the life and legacy of Abraham Lincoln. And one of the panelists here has spent a lot of time in a lot of depositories, museums, archives throughout the nation. He's even won a prize for a number of works that he has worked on. Dr. Burlingame, you were here at the beginning of the center. You were here when we were talking about developing it. You have a vision of your own for the center. I'd like you to share a little bit of that with the public, because I'm sure there are some out there wondering, why have another Lincoln organization or center? There are so many out there. What do you think makes us a little different?
My involvement with the center began 10 years ago. I had joined the faculty a couple of years earlier, and the head of development called me in and said, years ago, we had a plan to establish a Center for Lincoln Studies here at UIS in conjunction with the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, which was just getting underway. And elaborate plans were drawn up and funds were being raised, and all of a sudden it was torpedoed by Rod Blagojevich, the governor. "We wonder if you would be interested in helping to revive that." I said, "Well, by all means. Although I do have one reservation, and that is that there is a very fine Center for Lincoln Studies, scholarly center at Knox College in Galesburg, headed by two very fine Lincoln scholars, Rodney Davis and Douglas Wilson. I would like to clear it with them first." And so I got in touch, these are good friends of mine. And so I got in touch with Doug and Rod and said, "Don't want to poach on your turf, but what do you think?" And they said, "Well, the center here isn't going to go on forever, probably. And we would be glad to have the kind of work that we're doing continue someplace else here in Illinois, an appropriate spot." We got the go ahead. And what they had been doing in a magnificent fashion, these two gentlemen at this scholarly center, which is very different from Lincoln groups and societies. These were serious scholars publishing original source materials related to Lincoln. doing thorough job of accurately transcribing lots and lots and lots of documents, indexing them with a good subject index and making them available. It's a tremendous boon for scholarship. And they no longer are, they're in the final stages. The final volume of their series is in the works. But they've done several important works, including the diary of one of Lincoln's cabinet members, a scholarly edition of William Herndon's immense treasure trove of interviews and correspondence with people who had known Lincoln, absolutely invaluable. And the Lincoln-Douglas debates, getting the text straight, extraordinarily useful for all future students and scholars of Lincoln. The torch is now being passed to us, at least in that department. The Lincoln Studies Center at UIS will have a broader scope than that. But what I'm particularly interested in is carrying on the work that they did in providing the world with a high quality scholarly editions of Lincoln primary source materials that would make it possible for generations to come to better understand Lincoln. There's a long list of things that need to be done. I look forward to helping students and hopefully, we hope, visiting scholars and postdocs to continue that noble tradition, which was also started here in Springfield with the Abraham Lincoln Association, which published the letters and speeches of Abraham Lincoln back in the 1950s. Here in Springfield, we will continue to do what the Abraham Lincoln Association launched, what the Knox College Lincoln Studies Center continued, and it's a noble tradition which we are proud to undertake and to continue.
The rich history of Lincoln has spanned centuries. When we look back at scholarship by Lincoln individuals who have dove into the life of Lincoln, Dr. Burlingame can know him on a personal level based on all of the different research he has done. But in the Lincoln scholarship world, there lacks a little bit of diversity among scholars and among the research base. Dr. Peck, what types of diversity can we see within Lincoln scholarship, and what do you think we can learn from Lincoln's life into further diversifying the Lincoln scholarship world, but also diversifying the types of scholars that will come in the future?
One thing is important is to recognize that Abraham Lincoln is a man for all seasons, and he's a man not just for America, but for the whole world, because he believed in universal ideas of equality. We wish to spread that message above all. That's a welcoming, inclusive message by definition. And in fact, that quote I read to you expressed it perfectly, that he saw the Declaration of Independence as being for everybody. And he made that very clear in his presidency when he talked about the United States as being the last best hope. That's how he understood the unfolding of freedom and equality in this country as a precursor to freedom and equality for as many people in human society as could possibly be reached over time. So I think that's one important way to think about it. Another way to think about it that's already got a lot of work done on it is to think about abolition and anti-slavery scholarship, because the abolitionist movement, which Lincoln wasn't directly a part of, but ended up feeding into the Republican Party and being enormously significant in shaping both their ideas and their policies. That movement was an interracial movement, and it had a much clearer focus on the greatest amount of equality that could be produced. So to a greater degree than the Republican Party, the abolitionist movement was promoting racial equality. So for instance, in Illinois, the abolitionists wanted to strike down the Black laws, which were laws that really very severely impacted people of color. And deliberately so, because the white legislators who pushed the laws and the Democratic Party who supported them didn't want Black people even living in Illinois. That was the fundamental reason for the laws, to try and discourage them from coming or staying. The abolitionists fought that, and they did so on a biracial basis. And I think that the center can do a lot to be encouraging the study of both abolitionism and anti-slavery. I certainly am interested in having a summer conference where we could have one on the abolitionist / anti-slavery movement invite a whole variety of people to do that. And I think we will have little difficulty getting a pretty diverse group of students and scholars for a subject like that.
That is definitely a huge goal here at the University of Illinois, to be as inclusive as possible, to invite people from all different backgrounds to come and study, not just here at UIS, but throughout the U of I system. And the center follows that by trying to include people from all different backgrounds in Lincoln Scholarship Studies, as well as promoting different aspects of studying the life of Abraham Lincoln.
And Mosley, describing how diversity is part of what the new UIS Center for Lincoln Studies is about, and how the examination of Lincoln requires the exploration of equity. Community Voices is a way to get to know your neighbors in these isolated times. Community Voices airs weekdays at noon and Saturdays at 5 p.m. When we return, the panel's favorite Lincoln quotes.
This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.